he's based in Barcelona, and then he had postdocs at Oxford, then in Bristol, and now he's in Toulouse. Can you just want to tell us about the...
Yeah, thank you. It's a pleasure for you here. It's the first time I see that this thing actually that long. So what I'm going to talk today about is antimatter, collisionary antimatter. There is a big problem, which is the fact that we haven't really heard about it. That HTML is the mission that we all observed from the galactic center. And there is no clear explanation yet for that. So I'm going to spend, this talk has two parts. So I'm going to spend the first part of the talk, 51, antimatter from numbers to two configurations. And that's, going to explain a solution to this problem, explanations for this emission based on superconducting quantum states. And then the second part of the talk is start from here, number two with the full configurations of magnetic fields. So another thing that we don't understand very well is how magnetic fields at the scales of clusters were created when you generate these fields that are here on kilobuses scales, even more. And there was a mechanism proposed long ago that magnetic fields could have been created at phase transitions, in particular at the electrical phase transition. So I'm going to explain with some numerical tests on this method, and I will explain that actually from small application you can generate magnetic fields that have a non-zero felicity. That would be an experimental test of the magnetic fields that we observe nowadays were created at the electrical phase transition. So here's the here's the outline of the talk. So first, I'm going to spend a few minutes reviewing the observations on the 511 problem. And then I'll go on to explain how we can explain these observations with superconducting cosmic strings. Those were objects that were proposed by Wigan back in 85. There are a few experimental consequences if these objects exist. That's one of the things. So the particle TQ will be one. That will be very exciting. And then I will switch gears in the last part of my talk. I will explain how you can generate magnetic fields, which are actually crucial for this mechanism in magnetic fields and generate this emission. So how these magnetic fields could be created at the time of electrical variogenesis at the so let me start. What is the 511 TV problem? Well, there is an experiment called Integral that released results like 3 years ago, that was released in 2006. And what they observe is that there is a diffuse emission. You're getting 10 to the minus 3 photons per centimeter squared per second. At 511 keV, so it's a very sharp line, also on some spectrum later, from the galactic center. So that's the picture of the emission they get. That's the central 1 kilobar state. So that's the emission. You only see emission from the galactic center. You see nothing else. Okay, these are some discrete sources. So this is 1 kiloparsec. Then you compute, okay, I have 1 kiloparsec volume, 1 kiloparsec cube, and to get 10 to the minus 3 photons per centimeter squared per second. So how many, this 511 keV, basically this is telling you that what is happening there is electrons and positrons are annihilating and giving you photons. So then, if you count in 1 kiloparsec cube, how many positrons do I need? You turns out that you need to be pumping in 10 to the 43 positrons per second in the central kiloparsec. That's a very big number, and that's very hard to explain. I'll give you a few of the mechanisms that have been proposed. This problem, why is it so difficult to solve? The problem lies not in the 10 to the 43 positrons. You can probably, there are mechanisms that generate 10 to the 43 positrons per second. The main problem is that you only see the emission from the galactic center, and it's not a point source. It's a diffuse emission from the galactic center. So it's not that it's something coming from the center and you see, oh, it's the black hole maybe doing something. Things now, it's a diffuse emission from the galactic center. Right? And so this is the spectrum. So this is 511, this is the line, the emission. And the width is 3 dB, so it's a very sharp line. So what this is telling you is that the, these electron positron annihilations, the positrons, are almost at rest when they annihilate. And actually, from the experiment, you see they, this is the spectrum that they measure, and you see that there is this little tail here to the left. So astrophysicists studying this tail can tell you lots of things about the intergalactic medium. They can tell you the temperature of the intergalactic medium. And one of the things that they can tell you is that you, what happens is that you have the positrons, you have electrons in the ambient intergalactic medium. So it's not that the positron meets the electron and annihilates. Before this happens, first you create the positronium atom. So it's, and the positronium will decay 1/4 of the time to in plus or minus, to photons. And 75% of the time will decay to 3 photons. There are 2 modes of decay for positron and proton. And from this tail, computing this difference, in the, this high difference, you can tell that 98% of the positrons before annihilating with an electron will form a positron in another. What this means is that you not only have to put 10 to the 43 positrons there, but you need to put them in very, with very non-relativistic. Okay? Okay. So now, let's try to explain.
So you can't predict the relativistic, but it will lose energy at some point. And
yeah, that's one of the motivations behind one of the proposals, the Lyapunov matter proposal, that you create a positron that is not, it's probably 100 MeV, and then while it travels, it will lose energy. But there are some problems with that. Now, I'll mention.
Well, the one, the much problem.
I'll talk about those. I'll mention these models later. There is a big problem actually with that. And so those are the first results in the 5 years ago. And now in 2008, I think you mentioned that. Okay. Then I went and looked at that paper. So the integral people published is actually part of the integral collaboration, not all of them. I'm not sure about that. They published this paper in Nature in January 15, where they claim that they solved this mystery, and that the thing that's behind this quasi emission is this thing called low mass X-ray binaries. And then so I went and I looked at the paper, and then you realize why it's only half the collaboration that signed the paper. It's a bit, so they are stretching results a little much. Actually, that paper only deals, what they find in this paper is they say the emission from the disk is the same energy. So you see more emission on one side than on the other. And they say, oh, and by the way, if I plot the positions of these objects, the low mass X-ray binaries, they are also similar in the same way. And they do a more of a spectrum test and more or less things match. So what happens is that this only dealing with the emission from the disk, which is way smaller. So it's not solving the Bose problem. So they are not solving the aggregate emission. Because now you know what the emission from the disk, which is much smaller, is, comes from these objects. But then so that doesn't explain the emission from the bolts. It's even worse. So it increases the bolts to this ratio.
Well, if you have just a factor of a few that precipitates what do you think? How well do you want to predict this?
So what you need to predict is 10 times more emission from the center than from the disk.
Well, we have 3 to 9. It's a factor of 3.
No, that's what is left after you put this low mass X-ray binary. These things have a factor of 1, basically. What's the ratio of 1? These are the ones that are known, and there are more in the center.
Yeah.
But still, you would get opposed to this ratio of a factor of 1. There is another thing that when these guys pulled to this ratio, so the emission, so what they are putting is flux. And if you translate it into luminosity, then it's even worse, because the pulse is farther away than the disk, we are in the disk, basically. So this also doesn't work. But, so what, basically, in this paper, they are talking about the emission from the disk. And so if you read just the paper and you skip through it, you say, oh, we've solved that, but they actually raised the problem. Because the problem is the emission from the bolt, you don't get this equation.
You also get different rate symmetries when you really cut for the master function from the sense.
Oh. So the thing is that, okay, one important thing is that if they, and there are other things, they've looked at some objects directly, and they don't see emission. So that's an even worse problem. So it's not clear. This object, basically what is the slow advanced binaries is you have a binary, you have a compact object and a stack that is greedy. And the low mass thing is the mass of the compact object is small. And then you could produce photon pairs that then they would produce in plasma pairs. That was one of the things. Or maybe creating radioactive nuclei that would decay. But it's not clear that they can escape from the environment. So this is just correlating the positions, but there is no mechanism behind that. So, and actually, there are, we've observed that three or four of these particular objects, one of them is very close, 1 kilopascal far away from us, and they don't see anything. So,
in what way?
Sir?
They don't see anything in what way?
In the, they don't see 5 kilopascal, the line image, you know, from the...
Have we seen this kind of emission from other radio galaxies around us?
No.
Is it true that Centaurus A doesn't exist?
So that's X-ray. So probably you get X-ray emission, but I doubt that you can map it to the level where you can see the center of the galaxy.
But the this line is observed in other galaxies.
I don't know, but maybe I don't think so.
The only point sources are point sources.
I kind of remember once seeing this line in some power state, but I have to read it.
So the other thing is that from the disk, you expect there are some astrophysical. So you get aluminum 26, which is created in supernova and all that, and that would be decay in 10 to the 6 years. And that produces you a photon line, which you can map. It's a 1800 kV line, and you can map it, and you see that it follows the disk where it starts to play, and supernova and all that. And so not only you produce a photon line, sometimes 85% of the time you produce a positron as well. So you would expect that some positrons correlate. The problem is that you will see much more uniform on the disk, so that's the main problem. So, and basically all the astrophysics mechanisms, what did they have? They have trouble explaining why there's no emission from the galactic center. So then back in 2003, people have invented, okay, this is where for instance, supernova, this is just looking at photos. You could also produce positrons from supernova. The problem is whether they could escape from the envelope. And their observation don't show them. So then back in 2003, there was a proposal by a group at Oxford, Salini, Cooper, and Tursil. They proposed that light dark matter, if dark matter was light, between 100 MeV or mass. Dark matter annihilation, particle annihilations, would generate the positron flux. So then, how does it work? You have dark matter particles, two dark matter particles annihilate, and you produce positrons. If the dark matter has a mass between 1 and 100 MeV, let's say 100 MeV, you are producing a positron electron positron pair of 100 MeV. This positron is too energetic to explain this line, but what happens is it will travel off the light, will lose energy, ions and losses and Coulomb losses. And eventually, it will cool down enough so that it will form a positron pair. And that's what you can use to the factor. The nice thing about that is that if you take the usual assumptions, which I'm not probably really justified, but as to how is the dark matter distributed in the galactic halo, you expect more dark matter in the galactic center. So what these guys did was fit the profile of the dark matter of the emission. If it came from the dark matter distribution to what was observed, they found a good match. So actually, if it comes from dark matter, you explain why you only see the galactic center. You would see much less. You would say if it's component from all the halo, it would be much lower, and you would see the emission from the galactic so this, basically, this is a fit.
What is gamma?
Gamma, so that's the dark matter profile. Usually, there is one of the ways to find it.
Okay.
So usually you need to know how is the dark matter distribution, the density distribution of dark matter, and then basically, so this goes as a constant. One of the ways to parameterize it is something. So towards the galactic center. If this gamma is around 1, you get an n. So then n body simulations, but that divides some people did some n body simulations of the physical gamma coverage distribution. And they found that a good fit that described the n body simulations was using this gamma equal to 1. So basically, the density distribution peaks as 1 over r towards the galactic center. Okay? That's from simulations. Okay? And it's not, that's only taking into account dark matter. So there, that, it's not clear that that's the way dark matter is distributed. There are other things that could affect the thing. And actually, there were observations that said you actually don't see this is how a stochastic profile when it's 1 or above 1 in stochastic profile. And there are observations that nobody has observed a stochastic profile from other.
This graph is the positive flux that
you predict? Yeah, it's the shape of the positive flux that you would predict by the value of gamma. The cool thing is that you get a good match for a mild profile. And this is our very stochastic profile. So 1, 1, 1, 2, but you get a good match for a gamma of 0.6.
What are the clear points?
So, this normalized to 1, it's only normalizing the shape. So, what the integral did is they have the emission from the balls and then they feed the profile. That's why I know that what I told you, it cannot be a point source. If you feed a point source, so that you get a very good feed. If you get a very good feed, if you feed a Gaussian profile or a top hat profile with a width of 9 degrees, which corresponds basically to 1 kilohertz, that's what it's about. So, basically, if the other profile were very gassy, it would look more and more like a point source, you would get a very good feed. And if it's very mild, you would get like something like an astrophysics distribution or a plan. You get a good feed for a gamma of 0.6, which makes sense.
So how does this fit with the rotation curves?
This is you're not taking into account the rotation curve, you're just taking that shape and then your emission basically, so your flux will be proportional to the line of sight integral of this density squared.
No. Presumably you should be able to see if this is a good or not.
For gamma. So you mean experimentally. Do we know what is the profile of the Milky Way? We don't know it very well. So I think like you cannot exclude any of these. There are some observations of microlensing events towards the galactic center that tell you that there is not much that matter in the galactic center. But those are very uncertain. So there are two things. You can say that okay, this gamma equal one, this is derived from MBLE simulations. You can say, okay, MBLE simulations it's okay but it's a good approximation because I'm already taking into account gravity. What about all the feedback from star formation? And usually you would think, oh okay, what this feedback is doing is taking dark matter out. Supernova explosions. But you can also go the other way around. Also, because baryons are much, they pull easier, so they can fall down into the center much easier than what the MBLE simulations are telling you, and then they can drag their matter.
So these curves are not meant to be in terms of each galaxy rather than one.
Well, the gamma equal one, this is universal for MBLE simulations. So what people do is they do simulations of tons of rails and they feed a profile. And for different sizes of the, what you do see from simulations is that from different sizes, you can simulate a cluster, you can simulate a galaxy, you can simulate a supercluster. The claim, more or less, the trend is that you more or less see the same profile, just scale down. So it's scaling down.
There is a thought of the rotation. If you look at other galaxies, they are very good rotation for profile.
Yes. The only problem is that this doesn't affect. So the mass that you have, this is the density. The mass is multiplied. So whether this is gassy or not.
This is just in the ball, right?
Yeah.
Spotting the mirror.
So the way the distribution in the center won't affect you very much the dynamics, the field rotation dynamics.
This is the density.
So density affects very much the flashes that you get, but it doesn't affect the dynamics of the galaxy because the mass that you have there is not that much anyways. So that's why it's hard to exclude.
This is very undominated.
No, most of the point I'm saying is basically, as you said, it's going to be in the middle, but you're not sure.
So you can constrain the total mass, but it's how you distribute it there, I think, the observations of the world. Okay, so that was the proposal. And so the nice thing about this proposal is that it explains why it came mainly from the galactic center. But there are some problems with that. And then one of the problems is, as we were mentioning before, what happens if I create a positive planet energy and I let it cool down? So the idea is, according to this model, is whether I create a positive energy, if my dark matter mass is 50 or 100 or 200, I won't see the difference. I create a positron at 100, 200, and it will cool down, then it will annihilate. Okay? Until it creates a positron in atom and it decays, it's completely invisible. It's concealed. And then Vigo et al. In 05 and 06, they found out is that that's not true. You cannot hide a positron that is 100 MeV energy. The reason being that you can create, this is called internal awareness tunnel, that while the positron is traveling, pulling down, intergalactic meaning, it will emit photons. Okay? It will emit a continuum of photons so you will see on the other side of the body, you will see something there. And those are very much constrained by EGRs. You will see if
no,
you.
No, this is not from the cooling. This is direct.
This direct, this is not from the star. This
thing would be due to the secret.
Yeah, this is a quantum correction. This is a quantum correction, and it has nothing to do with the mechanism that you produce. It's only because you have a project under this.
So it's during the annihilation.
So you create that, and then you will see that.
But, to be honest, even the integral people have a paper on the shape of the line, right? And the shape of the line itself would be inconsistent with a 100 for positive. So it would be much too to the higher energies.
No, because it's also you want to create positive.
You wouldn't pull the all the positrons to form this shape. You do simulations and you see that nothing 10 millimeters doesn't work. You get completely.
But the shape, that's what they say in the shape. But you need to know your interstellar medium very well. These constraints from EGRET are more robust. You don't need to know. That's a production. If you create positrons at 100 MeV, you will create these photons and you will see them in EGRET. The thing about the shape profile, you do say it's disfavored, but you wouldn't be able to exclude it, probably. Whereas here, with these observations, you can exclude it directly. Because you can always vary the temperature of the intergalactic medium and you can change it through ways. There are a few more uncertainties out there, probably. But it's a hint, okay? It was not a good fit, and I agree with that. But I think that's probably what kills them all.
But it's up until 10.
Up until 10.
You can have it much smaller.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. So the only thing is that the original proposal, which was within 1 and 100, now it is still within 1 and 10. Then there are other things that these particles will influence the cardinal rotation. These particles will influence supernova dynamics. And then, again, there are lots of uncertainties in that, but you would affect the pulling. So supernovas would pull, would have another initial pulling mechanism, and then you would explain that from them.
Not the cooling, because the cross sections are quite large, so we will thermalize. What will happen is that they would bring down the energy of outgoing neutrinos.
Yes. So you would see the neutrino signal from supernova.
You would see the degraded neutrino energies from the supernova. Not in the additional cooling, because they will thermalize in the cooling.
Okay.
In the experiment.
Okay.
Is
there a
dark
matter that
affects
supernovae?
Yeah.
Because the temperature is 30 millimeters or so, and the cross sections are weak scale cross sections. So you will just, like you produce neutrinos, you will produce lots of these particles. They will be in thermal contact with the rest of the medium, and will actually prevent emergence of 10 or 15 MeV energy neutrinos that people observe when they're 1987.
So that actually is pushing you towards larger masses. So for that, it's of course uncertain as well, because we don't have any measures. But if you, then that would favor these thermal particles above 10 MeV. That doesn't kill them all, of course, I wouldn't take that as a serious thing. But so now you have, if you assume that this emission is explained by dark matter, you know that your dark matter range should be 1 and 10 MeV. And it's hard to build a particle physics model for that. You've done that.
The thing is that you can either get it from sort of decays or annihilations. With decays, it's much easier, right? Although you would need much cascade profiles because decays would be just density for the first part and not density squared. But typically, if you want this to be lit, right, then there is an additional requirement that you need a mediator particle, not just the dark matter scale, but some new bosons or whatever, new gauge, which may happen, at 100 MeV or so. You can play this game.
So basically, you can play this game, but what I'm trying to say is that this expansion is very interesting. It's not easy to build a consistent particle physics. Among other things, if you're thinking about thermally produced dark matter, you also have that you want to get the right density. That's also part of the thing you're producing elsewhere. And the cross section, the annihilation cross section that you would need is not the one that you explain the. Okay. So then another thing is, okay, another, if it's dark matter, you should also see emission from different places that are dark matter emitting. There is not only dark matter in the center, so there are dark matter clumps. And actually, we propose that one of the things we'd be looking at Sagittarius, and either of us look at Sagittarius, Corpus Proton, and they don't find emission from there. Although they don't have the same exposure as for the galactic center. And of course, you expect less emission here. Because you also, you don't know the magnetic fields that should be able to stop them. The positives would escape from there. So there are uncertainties, but you would escape. So, okay, what I'm trying to say here is that you will see the console. So, if this is the galactic center, so Sagittarius, the Borges parallel is here. So, integral did look at Sagittarius. And so far, they haven't seen it. They have less exposure, they haven't looked as much as far. Okay, but that's something that eventually they should see from other places. So, then with Thunderbird Chaspati, in also the case of not these years in Nixon, we propose that superconducting cosmic streaks can exploit that. So let me see how to make it work. First of all, what is a superconducting cosmic streak? Well, so you might have, so that this is the original, those were proposed originally by Whitten. So you might have basically a condensate, so you might have a scalar field that's coupled to electromagnetism. And that and you have a state that's created. That scalar field is, if it's charged, you get an unvacuum excitation value in the string. Then basically what happens is that the string becomes superconductive. That's proved right. But we didn't take it mind, basically. Right. That's if the charge is created, it's transported by a scalar field. What we will be more interested here is with fermionic superconductivity. So basically, you have a fermionic field which is coupled to the string. So you have a string created by a scalar and you have a fermionic field coupled to it by a power. Okay. Then what you can see is that you have zero modes that live inside the string. So like if you solve the direct equation of this fermionic field on the background of the string, you have states that have zero energy that can live in the string. Well, if these fermions are charged, then you can use that sort of conductive air field to move. They have a special relation in vacuum, is okay, okay, they are massless particles instead of string. Okay. So you have basically positrons, the positron field, which is coupled to a string, the scalar field of string by a double coupling. Okay. Inside the string, the positron would be massless, and outside the string, the positron would have a more mass particle and even mass. Okay. And inside the string, the positron would be critical because you know energy, so it's superconductive. Superconducting in the sense, I'm not saying that it has the whole why. Nobody has proved that there is the magnetic trapping in the shield and all that. But it's just that it causes you zero energy to inside the so you have current inside the string. Okay? So the mechanism is the following. So imagine that we have a string sweeping through the magnetic field lines in the galactic center. So then it's just Faraday law. So as it sweeps the magnetic field lines, it will use a current in the string. Okay. So if you wait long enough, the current keeps on growing because these things are superconducting. And eventually, the current inside the string the electrons will have enough energy so as to become real outside the string. Okay. And then they can jump outside the string. Okay. So inside the string, they are massless. As long as the current is below 511 keV in energy, the zero modes have to stay inside the string. If you keep on cutting magnetic field lines, by far the slower you keep on increasing the current, and eventually you will reach 5 kilo, and the positrons can leave the string. Okay, so that's the. So what happens is, like, once you have the current that is above the energy, then in principle it can stay in the string as well. You can. But then it's any perturbation would make it fall, it would make it leave the string. So you would basically be able to produce the positive. you will have other fields as well instead of the. But you need an additional perturbation, so there's any wiggle or whatever. So the thing is, about 5 to 11, the zero modes are unstable inside the surface state. So any perturbation will make you fall off. Of course, you still have to conserve charge and bear a number, for instance, as well. So you can produce protons. So you're going to, if you produce antiprotons, you're producing protons as
well. Well, now we produce antiprotons because the current will be quenched or
So that's, you need to study the whole dynamics of the string, if you do. But in principle, you could have quite current going up of the reactions. And if you look at that, one of the models for the string inhibition of paper, where there is a model with 28. And you have neutrinos going in one direction, you have the direction of in which the current circulates. Is that happening by U1 anomaly cancellation, and that's actually which direction things are traveling. So some things eventually will have collisions with zero modes going in opposite directions, and some things are, it's much easier to produce something than other. But the first thing that can escape is E+E-. Okay. So that's how the mechanism principle works. Now we have to check it. It
doesn't quite work, so that you don't. So are these things pretty linear, or are these things sort of twisted?
That's the whole pattern, that's where I'm going.
Because are you going to get safer final losses if this thing?
We have a little bit of that.
Super
losses.
You're accelerating anything.
Yeah.
If that current's accelerating anything, it's going to act just like a magnetic field.
Okay, so now what you're saying is I have a magnetic field from the galaxy interacting with my string. Okay, so
you're saying if you're accelerating the electron.
Yeah. This thing in principle is curved.
So then you
have some linear of curvature. Okay, but you need to be careful with that because this is a massless particle. So I'm not sure you can emit a photon that can get out of the. So you want this photon also to get out of the string. So you want the photon from the magnetic field from the uniform magnetic field in the galaxy to interact with the massless positron that is moving inside the string and then in the synchronon.
It could.
So it's something that could be looked at. Yeah. But it's
not
here.
Okay.
Yes, it's a good thing. We haven't thought about that. So you cannot, it's not just like I have this current inside the string, I cannot do this thing like I have an electron going inside the string and interacting with the magnetic field in the galaxy.
I haven't worked it out in this one.
No, it's a good point, yeah. So one thing is that how many positrons do we need will depend on how much string we have in the galaxy. And then we need to study the dynamics of the string in a quasar. String, which is a wire, and basically there are two competing forces here. There is the drag force, that this string will have a current, the plasma will try to stop this current. And then there is the tension force, so basically the string wants to get stable, and it is on trend tension. And then if you work it out, you'll find out that there is a, because of turbulence in the plasma, there is a characteristic radius of R star. Okay. And the radius depends on the quantities like basically the turbulence velocity of the plasma, the clearance length of the magnetic field. Okay. So if you put numbers, this is basically the number of positrons that you will need in as a function of perfect time. So it depends on the magnetic field that you have in the galactic center, it depends on the length of your screen. And it depends on the density and the bond velocity. So if you put numbers, these things are uncertain, we know them within different ranges. But if you put numbers, if you are very, very optimistic, you would be producing up to 10 to the 47 positrons per second. Yeah. That's being very optimistic. And that depends also on this scale is basically the energy scale of the string. So is this this. What we have in mind is a string that was produced at the PV scale.
So
okay.
What is the small L?
Small L, so that's the turbulent length of the, you have a turbulent plasma here, have the one velocity, and that's that L is the length scale for transparency.
The idea that the program is drive the string.
So then the idea is that you start with a string, and then for some reason, the turbulent velocity would start stretching the string out and starts creating eddies. So you're basically, the turbulent plasma, what it does is from an initial string length of L, it creates you more and more and more. If you have the right radius of curvature, which is even by that R star. Okay. So that's what it's doing. So in the turbulent plasma, it's stretching, it's creating, it's pulling string out of it. So the turbulent plasma is creating your radius of string. Okay. And so, then it's clear, at least we need the one thing. It's like we can produce 10 to the 43 per second. We can produce 10 to the 47. If the things at the RFID scale, basically. Okay. Then there's the other thing, like, how do these positrons come out? Do they come out so I told you that as soon as the current reaches 5 to 11 keV, they can get out of the string. Okay, but maybe they stay in the string for a little longer, and maybe I'm producing positrons at the beginning, I don't know. Okay. That could be a problem. Well, what you can do now is, like, before I wrote the dispersion equation of the zero modes inside the string, so that's the solution of the Dirac equation in the background of the string, and you see that the zero modes have a dispersion equation which is for mass expansion, omega equal k. Now what happens is that you will have a magnetic field that where this string is moving now. Okay? You can see what is the dispersion equation of these zero modes in the presence of the magnetic field. So basically you're solving the Dirac equation in the background of the string with a magnetic field. So it's like the Landau problem. You will find the Landau levels, but in the background of the string. So you should be able to solve. So we did that, but we took a simplified model. We took a looking roll that was one dimension. And we solved the equation. And what you find is that it's a bit particular. The dispersion equation gets completely modified. And instead of having omega, so this is the omega equal k dispersion relation. So as soon as you increase the current, the dispersion relation flattens out for itself. So what this tells you is that no matter how much time you will let the string sweep current, the current will never go above 5 to 11 keV. It will stay just below the, just at the threshold. I cannot have 100 MeV positrons circulating inside the string. Okay. So then we don't have problems with the Bremsstrahl. Okay. So there will be no Bremsstrahl. You won't be creating positrons that fast. Okay. So that's the first part of the talk. The last 15 minutes in some style. Okay. Last 15 minutes I'll switch gears now and I'll do the review. Talk a little bit about costing magnetic fields. Okay. So as I said, we do observe magnetic. So there are indications that there are magnetic fields on cluster scales. They are given over at least tens or hundreds of kiloparsecs with intensities that can go between the meter, basically nanograms. They are intergalactic scales. And they are coherent, so you need to have a mechanism to explain. There are different mechanisms. Usually you start from a seed, and then there are dynamo processes that can basically amplify these. But there was an observation that you might create magnetic fields from a phase transition. Right? And in particular, processes like electrolytic baryogenesis, there was a proposal that if baryogenesis happened at the electrolytic scale, you would create a magnetic field with a non-zero electricity. Basically, what this means is that the magnetic field lines are linear. That's a non-zero felicity. This is important for astrophysical purposes as well, because in a plasma, felicity is conserved, and actually what a non-zero felicity allows you to transfer power from small scales to large scales. You can start with a magnetic field that is not coherent, that is coherent on a scale, and not only not erase the coherence on that scale, so the plasma will freeze that in, but also transfer power to larger scales, so that you can explain magnetic fields that are coherent on large scales. And then the other thing is that there are very few mechanisms to sort of follow, and that I don't know of any other mechanism that creates non-zero velocity. The way this works, so I said that this is related to biogenesis. So how does this work? The proposal is the following. So, well, it has to do with at the time of biogenesis, the biogenesis will have spiral transitions, okay? Spiral transitions, these are non-perturbative configurations that basically, this is the, so you know that the electroweak vacuum is, can be leveled by the Church-Sanders number, and different Church-Sanders, so the vacuum is in an integer Church-Sanders number. And this vacuum is physically going to this one, and basically we're sitting basically here. Okay. And to go from here to here, you need to go fast through here. Okay. And if you look at the height of this barrier, this is of the order, this is good one, but this is of the order of 5p. That's the next of the smaller p value. So nowadays, we are in this vacuum, we're not going to move here. That's the energy of this barrier. But at the electrode phase transition, we do have the energy to create these configurations. And people think that this is at the time of the electrode phase transition. We were moving from here to there in the axis. So solar conditions were fully photos at the time. So you can see a spiral, a way to depict the spiral is just, basically this is not a spiral, but a spiral could be a monopole antimonopole. You can view it as a monopole antimonopole pair, which is linked with a Z string that has a twist. Okay? And that twist of the Z-string is what will transfer into the non-zero helicity. So to build that, imagine that you start from two Z-string links, and then these links, they produce monopole anti-monopole pairs in case. So you start with a Z-field, okay? And then this thing decays. So you're left with magnetic field. That's the only thing that you're left with, that decays. Your massless modes are with magnetic. And since if the Z field was linked, you had a non-zero linking here, that transfers into non-zero linking, and so that this is that in the magnetic field. And that's what imprints the non-zero helicity in the magnetic field. That's what makes it really peculiar. Any magnetic field that comes from Z strings or objects that were linked, non-zero linkage, will give you non-zero linkage. Right. And as I said, the spiraling is something that has non-zero linkage. So any spiraling transition will produce you, if it produces magnetic fields, they will have non-zero linkage. Okay. That was the proposal. And there was an estimate, which is that the helicity will produce is related. This is a factor of order that produces you.
What is
NB? NB is the variable number. So that was basically what happened until the helicity. So but that, this image of the spiral is semi-analytical approach. So it's a way that you can see the spiral configuration, but it's not exact, okay? So this was a qualitative proposal. So you need to go and test it. So what we need...
The number in the graph?
So the helicity is this quantity.
No, I don't know. How does it translate to the
That's a helicity of the magnetic field.
Yeah.
So
and there's a length scale, which is I guess the horizon.
Yeah, which is nowadays would be a few hundred parsecs.
You can then convert this to strength of magnetic field. So I just wondering what is the number.
No, you can convert that to the helicity. So linking number of the magnetic field. Because the strength of the magnetic field, the magnetic field will evolve with expansion as 1/2 the scale value squared. And then you might also have other mechanisms, like dynamo, or like, you might increase the intensity. But helicity is conserving the evolution, not the intensity. That's in a plasma, as long as the plasma is better than the dark field. That's the thing. So,
I think there must be a number that comes out.
Yeah. The other thing is you need to measure the velocity of the velocity of one person. So, anyways. Yeah. I'll show you the number of the helicity per variable per spiral transition. So what you did is we went and tested the numerically. So we put the spiral on the lattice. So we call it the SQ plus 1 equations in the lattice. and node. So instead of working with the page fields and dots, you work with the loop elements, you put the page fields and the links, and then the scalar fields in the fixtures already in the sites. And then we set up a convolutional algorithm from this model. So we put basically the external profiles of one spider and we put it in the eyes. So basically we start from our SE231 fields sitting here, and we let it evolve. So in principle that's an unstable equilibrium point, but no matter how you do, if this is a lattice, so you won't see the exception, the thing will decay. We let it evolve. And then we measure the electromagnetic flux, if it becomes zero, right? And in order to do that, you need to go to the interrogation. There is an ambiguity here. You need to be careful with how you define it, that electromagnetic field, because the Higgs field is here in this space. But you can always go to the interrogation. You should go to the interrogation space. And then we measure it. That's what we see. So here in this plot, that's the evolution. That's the evolution of Church and number. And that's the felicity evolution. So basically what you see is that the evidence, so if you're changing the change of number, you're changing the felicity number, you're creating the felicity. And that's an American result. Okay, so that confirms basically all those images that the spamming can be viewed as a Z-string with a linkage. That might not be completely exact, but at least the groups of the mechanism is there. So every time you change the change of number, you're left with a magnetic field that has an algebra. What we do find is that number alpha, that basically was the electromagnetic coupling constant, there are some coupling constants, and the numbers that were in the seminal studies were suggested were of order 200. We find a number that is much less, so you produce less felicity than what you would expect. But we are still studying because that might depend on the decay modes of the. We don't have, in the simulation, we don't have quarks.
You don't expect to get zero from any simulation, so isn't this just numerical?
This is okay. This is because then at some point your box is limited and you have absorbing boundary conditions. So after a certain point, everything has left the box.
No, but I'm just saying that you know this is not numerical error. What is the numerical error at the expected in the logic?
The 2.5. It's not only numerical errors. We've started from a particular configuration, which is the smaller, and which decays only to the scalar field. So you expect this might expect them, even if it's of order you expect some numerical error here from the numerics. Okay. We check different box sizes, and that changes from 2.1 to 3. So it's on this ballpark. We don't get 100, or we don't get 0. We never get 0. We always get a correlation with the chance. So we've changed box sizes and and it's a order of 3%. But on top of that, you need to take into account that, again, this is a particular configuration. The important thing is that what you see is that the felicity tracks the change in the chance sentence number. So every time you change the chance sentence number, which will happen. We know that spiral transition will happen in the universe, whether they were crucial for electrogravitogenesis or not, but at least we believe that they were in the universe. So every time there was a spiral transition, you change the value number by one, then you're creating an energy field within the universe. Okay. Whether the proportionality is 2.5 or not, so the felicity is 2.5 times the number of spiral transitions that happen, or it's 200 probably to read the most. So now what we're doing is studying different initial conditions, so not starting with the... So the SE231 spiral is a slightly asymmetric. We are doing things more asymmetric than maybe just really starting, not exactly at the top of the potential, but trying to see if we can start with and then we need to go more now to see what happens. But all we always find that there's exploratory. Okay. And I'm going to skip. So this is the summary of my talk. So, well, I hope that I give you the 511 GeV problem. I hope to convey that there's still a problem here that we still don't know. What's causing this emission from the galactic center? And then explain how cosmic streams, supercomputing cosmic streams, could be producing this emission. Okay. This, at least if this is the model, there should be no new physics at the TV scale, because the things that are at the TV scale, standard model doesn't have supergravity things. So you need probably some extra physics that, but the fixed position allows you at least to have the stores for these things. And then the last part of the problem, how heavy fields with non-zero physics are signature of varying number of changing conditions that happen at the scale. And if we ever measure, so it's hard to measure non-zero physics in a field. One of the proposals is now that Auger has the sources, they see where the particles come from. So if you have a charged particle and you know where it comes from, you should see an excess of particles coming from, let's see, if you have a magnetic field in this direction, you should see that more particles are radiating on the top than in the bottom. There is an asymmetry there, it's not quite particles coming from the bottom. But if you have charged particles that you know the source, you let them travel long enough, there are some asymmetries that could play a dimension. But for that, you need to know the sources. But we are advancing in that direction, in that sense. That's if ultra high energy concentrations are charged particles that we can handle. And then if you see that the magnetic field is not here, has no zero velocity, that would be, then there are no mechanisms to easily produce a zero velocity on large scales. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Not on large scales, because that dynamo will be a much, I'm not sure that you can, but dynamo will be a lot of things. So what dynamo can do is galaxies have microlaws.
Yeah.
So that's a much smaller than nanolaws or whatever. Mm-hmm. So what this can do is, you start from a scene that is 10 to the minus 20 gauss, and then dynamo will enhance that. Increasing the density, but I don't think that you really don't know. I don't think that you change the linking of the magnetic field lines. You just put more lines in there. But I don't know how you put it here. At least on large scales.
But on a small scale, you say you can have tests on the galaxy scale, but there you can measure galaxy.
Yeah. But there will be things. Pretty well, I'm not sure that you can measure the shape of the galactic magnetic field is not well known.
Well, on larger scales,
You can measure the density. Yeah, you can measure the density. You can put bumps on the density.
You can put bumps, and you don't measure it, and you don't have a three-dimensional map of our models. So you're saying that doesn't test this because?
I don't see how. So what if you put a different, so that's a 3D structure that you need. So that's why cosmic rays probably, I guess, is that the energy cosmic rays are the best way to have particles that have been traveling for a few megaparsecs, like 10 megaparsecs, and you know where they come from. They've been traveling to something and they can go over megaparsecs. And you know the particles. The thing is, you need lots of statistics, so it's a hard thing to test. But in density, so CMD, what you're testing is probably the total intensity. BBM, you're testing the energy density in the magnetic field, so then whether it's helical or not, you won't see a difference. CMB, you're testing how the polarizations travel, so the two polarizations travel differently in the magnetic field.
Well, if you see the synchrotron, I think the polarization of synchrotron gives you better magnetic, the direction of the magnetic field, so that's what CMB is. But I'm still confused. Are you saying that dynamic mechanism can generate electricity or not? So you're saying that it cannot?
At least on that scale.
Okay.
Like, you have to do is you have to take magnetic field lines, not only put more magnetic field lines, but also link them. So you want to put more magnetic field lines, create them, link them, and see how you can do that. At least I don't know.
But if you generate that magnetic scale somehow, then you can inject it right into the cluster.
The problem now, so this, the plasma was a perfectly protected plasma at the time of the transition all the way into the cavity. So magnetic field ones are frozen, it's preserved. Now, if you eject stuff in the cholesterol medium, that's not a perfectly protected plasma. So you are not going to get the equal constructs, No, but everything runs well before it. So it's an infrared.
So you mentioned the positronium gas at the center of the galaxy.
Yes.
Possibility. So you said it was narrow, but you didn't say what the kinetic temperature of the gas would be. Do you know what that is?
So, okay, there are different. So there is, I think there are people, when they fit the shape of the line, they fit two or three components. There's a cold component, which I think it's, so depending on whether it's molecular diversion, you have a component of molecular diversion, and then you have a component of atomic diversion.
Yeah.
4,000 kelvins or something like that. I think that's a number that's for the molecular cold component, 4,000 kelvins.
So has anybody worked out what the infrared stuff? From transition.
After the positronium.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, the positronium doesn't mean.
No, that would be sort of part of the question. Has anybody worked about whether you can see this in other.
The transitions of the positronium, we see because the volume.
As it been tomorrow, we go through all several levels before it would annihilate.
Exactly. You think there's more than one line? There could be more than one.
Yeah. It would be so dumb to work this out, but it
would be interesting to know whether there are other ways of detecting this, other constraints. It'd have to be in infrared because the extinction is too thick.
So the fact that this goes through via positronium, that's a well established. That's known from basic meetings. And then I agree, that's known from these stars.
There is a non-binary dynamic group, right? Many more lines between the extensions.
So you're saying that there will be more lines? Here?
There should be.
It's just like the line.
It's like the bomber series. That's the issue. Yes, that's what I'm trying to get at.
Yeah.
You know, it depends on the background. This is new to me, so I'm wondering if anybody's worked this out.
It's a miracle that this pops out to above the gamma background. So if you get to the
it's not that. I mean,
it's messy.
Yeah, but I mean, it's not terrible. Right? And depending on
if anybody's worked out the surface brightness.
It's on the face. It's not crazy. I don't think it's not crazy.
I think you will miss. Feel like you're producing a similar number of optical photons. Not orders of magnitude, but a similar.
You mean from this process?
From which what Mark.
No, that's
saying.
What I'm saying.
The similar number of photons, in terms of number of counts, you produce a similar number of optical photons. That's 511 KV photons.
I'm only asking if somebody's actually worked it out.
Right now.
That's the
thing.
That's a number. That's what is the
optical
photons
per second?
Yeah, the flux would be similar.
Yeah, but is it converted to the dust? Or is that
I guess if you just take the.
There's three photons.
It's another minus three
photons per second.
Photons
per
second.
Yeah. So the astronomers is a different
small.
Big range unit, that's the problem.
Photons per second is a nice unit.
Is it?
It's actually something.
It's an unreasonable flux spread over that area.
It's the surface brightness that's going to.
I guess it's true. Also not.
The other thing is that it has a very good energy resolution, but the angular resolution is pretty small. So it's pretty balanced. So if you have something. That's why they can exclude a point source because it doesn't fit the profile. It's not that basically. might be you might have a few point sources there with better resolution you can see, and maybe.
Yeah, but with the infrared, you can do much better.
You can do much better, so that might be a good thing. If you could correlate one thing with the other, you can map whether this source is fully diffuse or not. So that would be a good thing.
It might be crazy, but something
similar
to the info.
So, the whole thing I'm doing is it's almost as if you can't get from whatever the source of the problem from you.
It would be very novel to detect because, you know, there are people actually looking in the lab to try to detect positrons and they're looking for the H alpha ones.
It's a thing that's Harvard and really very famous at Stanford. So, you really need to think into the punch of
Yeah, they're trying to work from like one to two lines.
Right.
Thank you.